of the House Judiciary Committee come to order. It is 1 p.m. on Monday, April 6th. We have today with us Representative Klayman, Representative Lynn, Vice Chair Keller, and myself, Chair Ledoux. Remind everybody to please silence the devices. And it is another marijuana day in House Judiciary. We have two bills.
Do you have any bags?
No, no bags, no show and tell today. We have two bills before us today, SB 30, the marijuana crime bill, and HB 123, the governor's bill to establish a marijuana control board. I intend to try to move HB 123 out of committee today, and I'm planning on holding SB 30. And regarding SB 30, I want to clarify something. What today's hearing, assuming that we get to it, about SB 30 is about. The version that came out of the Senate, version T, is much different from version Q, which came out of Senate Judiciary, and which we heard basically at the same time or slightly after Senate Judiciary heard it. By the way, Representative Foster has joined us. So while there are many similarities between those two bills, they exemplify two very different strategies for legalization. And today we will be briefed on the two different roads that these two different versions of this bill travel, their implications, and the options before this committee. That's, again, assuming that we have enough time after we've dealt with HB 123. So first up, HB 123, we have Michaela Fowler of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and we have Cynthia Franklin of the ABC Alcohol Beverage Control Board online available for questions as well, and we have a CS for the bill. May I have a motion to adopt version 29-GH1110/N?
Chair, I move 29GH1110M for the bill under consideration today.
Thank you. Hearing no objections, version N is before the committee. First, Ms. Fowler, please put yourself on the record and brief the committee.
Good afternoon, members of the committee.
And before you go any further, Representative Grunberg has joined us.
We're version N?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Michaela Fowler. I'm the legislative liaison for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Version N has several changes from the prior version that you've seen a sectional of. Those changes begin in Section 3. This section has been amended to clarify and put into statute the intent that the Alcohol Beverage Control Board and the Marijuana Control Board would meet one right after the other. The intent, because they will have a shared staff, having the meetings follow one another will decrease the travel costs incurred by the state. Section 7 is a new section, and this section simply places the Marijuana Control Board on the list of entities whose hearings are conducted by the Office of Administrative Hearings. Section 9, which previously was Section 8, has been amended. This is the transition language, and this is really the most substantive change in this version, and it changes what is considered experience for members of the marijuana industry during the initial formation of the board. Previously, it was the bill required that two members of the alcohol industry serve that initial board term, and in this version, it is two members who have experience in the marijuana industry obtained through lawful participation in the marijuana industry or participation in an academic or advocacy role relating to the marijuana industry. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Ms. Fowler? Okay, then I would now like to open up public testimony. And so the first person that we have online, we have Cynthia Franklin. And I noticed you're going to be testifying from Bethel, Cynthia? Is Ms. Franklin online?
Madam Chair.
Hi.
Hi. This is Cynthia Franklin. I'm the director of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. I'm visiting Bethel today for a community meeting about liquor.
Thank you. You want to proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for hearing this bill today. We are supportive of the version going forward, as Ms. Fowler indicated. I don't really have anything to add to prior testimony, but am happy to take any questions about the bill.
Do we have any questions for Ms. Fowler? All right, well, thank you very much. And Cynthia, could I ask you to be sure to stay online or available for testimony when we consider SB 30?
Madam Chair, yes, I'm here at the LIO and Bethel online.
Thank you. Next up for testimony is Rachel Young from the Marijuana Policy Project. Rachel, do you want to identify yourself for the record and proceed to testify?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Rochelle Young, and I'm a legislative analyst for the Marijuana Policy Project. I'm also speaking on behalf of the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol this afternoon. Overall, we're generally very supportive of HB 123. We believe it creates a reasonable regulatory structure, and we especially appreciate this committee taking into account our feedback regarding the selection of the initial two members to represent the marijuana industry. The current CS, we believe, is a much better version than the previous HB 123. We do still have a couple of suggestions, specifically regarding the composition of the potential board members, and in order to ensure that people with the most expertise and the most relevant expertise not be excluded, and also to ensure that members of the board that will be implementing this law actually do support the law that was passed by the voters, which may seem silly, but we've had issues with that in other states. So our first recommended amendment is to clearly allow board members who are previous rather than solely current members of public health and public safety. Specifically, we believe this clarification is necessary because it is not clear at the time if a person serving in those capacities must be a current official or if former officials also qualify. We recommend revising this to clearly allow both current and former public health and public safety officials to serve on the board. As it's currently drafted, it appears that a person with only 1 year of experience in either of those professions would qualify, while a person who has retired from a decades-long career in either of those fields or who has moved their career to a private university or other nonprofit public sector may not. And so to have a maximum pool of qualified candidates, we believe that requirement should be brought in to allow people who have previous experience in those fields as well. Secondly,
Representative Grunberg, did you have a question?
Yes, if I may on this point.
Go right ahead.
Yes, Ms. Young. Are you referring to some language on page 7, lines 2 to 5? Where did you find language supporting your reading?
I am looking at section 2, so that is actually sorry, let me reorient myself. I'm actually looking at page 2. Lines 15 and 16, where we discuss, where it initially lays out the, or through the chair, I'm looking at page 2, lines 15 through 16, where it lays out the composition of the board, one person from the public safety sector and one person from the public health sector. And so our recommendation is that those two positions allow someone who is a former public health or public safety official to apply to fill those positions.
Madam Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
Please look at page 7, lines 2 through 5. And that language, I think, clearly would clarify, would clarify the fact that the person could be in the industry now or have experience in it. And it wouldn't make any sense to me to read the one which is more clear as allowing experience and the other not to. I can understand your desire to clarify, but it looks to me like the intent is to allow anybody with experience as well. And we certainly can clarify that.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Continue, Ms. Young.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Under section, that same section, I was looking at section or page 2 with the initial with the overall composition of the board. And actually, we're down to page 3, sections 14 or lines 14 through 20, looking at the definitions of public health sector and public safety sector as far as who qualifies for those positions. We would recommend that these board members not be selected from a professional who is involved in federal law enforcement capacity or federal public safety capacity. We believe it may be inappropriate to include current federal law enforcement authorities, given that all of the conduct that the board will be writing rules for is still currently illegal under federal law. And then the third amendment that we recommend is that it be clarified within the bill that all board members are committed to faithfully implementing Measure 2, given that the board will be responsible for implementing this law that was approved by voters. It's very important that all members of the board actually, or at least if they do not personally support it, that they're committed to regulating and taxing marijuana as the voters intended, and not that they oppose the implementation of that law. The reason for that, I suppose, is that allowing the possible inclusion of board members who are hostile to the law itself and who favor unlawful delays instead of faithful implementation could thwart the people's law and would likely lead to litigation and reduced faith in the government. Again, this may seem like an obvious implied requirement for someone serving in that position, but we have seen difficulties with similar board or commission membership in other states. And that concludes my remarks, Madam Chair. Those are the few amendments that we would recommend.
Thank you. Any questions?
I do.
Representative Grunberg.
Just one, and this is your last comment. It sounded, if I may paraphrase it, like you want some provision maybe in the law that these board members support the law or support the concept of legalizing marijuana or something. Is my understanding wrong? Is that what you said?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I wanted to clarify that I meant the person appointed to serve on the board support the implementation of the law, even if they do not support legalization themselves.
have a question.
Representative Millett.
And so, Ms. Young, I might have missed it, but when you were talking about public safety sector, you wanted to take the federal out. What about in the public health sector? You also have a state or federal person in that also. Would you want consistency in that and to have a public health sector mean a state or a local entity and not a federal?
Through the chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, may I add to my response to the previous question as well?
Certainly.
Through the chair, if the bill were not to explicitly state that the person serving on this board be required to state their support, or one way in which we suggest it may be possible to evaluate whether someone supports the faithful implementation of this law is if it were asked as a question on the application forms, and that at least be taken into consideration.
You know, I can see where you're coming from, but on the other hand, it's almost like you want a loyalty oath or something, and I don't think we ask people or we put it into statute that somebody who serves on a board has to be in favor of something. It's kind of implied that you do your best to fulfill the duties of the board. And so that's my gut reaction. Representative Millett.
I just can't see someone applying for a board position if they vehemently oppose the position of the board. It seems like someone would want to serve on a board because they desire to see that board implemented in a correct way. And I think we'd know through our culture of marijuana people if someone was applying for the board and was in opposition of marijuana. I think we'd know. I think we hear that on occasion when we have board members up here when we talk to them and go through it. So I can't imagine someone applying for a position that they absolutely hate.
And the board is subject, Ms. Young, to legislative approval. So I'm sure that somebody along the line is going to ask the question, or it would come out if somebody was trying to join the board because they wanted to railroad it. Representative Greenberg.
And that may also go to your comments about deleting the word federal, because, you know, you're not going to appoint a federal person if the federal person is basically opposed to the thing. But at some point, I expect that as this movement catches ground, the federal law will be modified accordingly. And so I would hesitate just to say couldn't be a federal person, because this law hopefully will be on the books for a while.
Any further questions for Ms. Young? All right, well, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman LeDoux.
And so the next person we have on the line is Bruce Schulte. Bruce, do you want to identify yourself for the record and then proceed?
Good afternoon, Chairman LeDoux. My name is Bruce Schulte. I'm the spokesman for the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation. And I just want to, you know, thank you for the time to speak. And I would just echo Ms. Young's comment that this version of the bill is very much improved, and I appreciate all the committee's work on this. I really just have a couple of relatively minor suggestions that I'd like to offer, if I may. On page 4, beginning on line 15, under powers and duties of the board, it indicates that the board shall control the cultivation, manufacture, possession, and sale of marijuana. And I'd like to respectfully suggest that perhaps the word control would be more appropriately replaced with the word regulate.
Yeah.
And then I would also suggest that the word possession might be stricken from that sentence entirely, because the board is actually charged with the regulation of the cultivation, manufacture, and sale of marijuana, but not necessarily personal possession. I believe the personal possession is actually dealt with under statute with the passage of this initiative. So that is the extent of my comments. And again, I very much appreciate all the work that's been done on this. And if there's any additional questions, I'm available to answer.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Schulte? All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Schulte. Is there anybody else online? Is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify? Representative Greenberg, do you have a question for somebody, or are you ready to testify?
Yeah, it should be appropriate.
He's looking for somebody to testify.
No respect. I'm going to excuse to say that. I went broke. I don't know. Anyway, on page 4, line 19, and I guess maybe...
Representative Greenberg, is this a question for somebody?
It's a question for somebody, yeah.
For somebody who's testified. Okay.
Yeah.
Page 4, line 19.
Where's the young lady who... with you? I'm not forgetting. What is your name?
Wow!
What is your name?
Michaela Fowler.
Miss Fowler, I'm sorry. I should know that after all the times we've talked.
You know, Representative Greenberg, I was hoping to close public testimony and then we could bring the division or the...
Sure.
Okay. So is there... You can probably stay up there. Is there anybody else in the audience who'd like to testify? All right. We're going to close public testimony. And so now we can, as a committee, discuss the bill or ask any questions to Ms. Fowler. Representative Greenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for the confusion. On page 4, line 19, will the adoption of regulations be under the Administrative Procedures Act?
Through the Chair, Representative Greenberg, yes.
Through the Chair. And that is specified where?
I believe that is specified in the back of the bill. I apologize for not knowing. But I believe that we do have that specified in...
Page 7?
On page 6, I believe it is. I'm sorry, can I call a lifeline? Our attorney, Harriet Milkes, is in the room.
I can point it out. It's page 6, line 14 and 15, and 16 and 17, registration means registration or licensure as determined by regulation. But are you looking for a specific Administrative Regulation Act?
Yeah, I suspect, through the Chair. And I saw maybe one of your people back there was looked like
yes.
She wanted to come up. I suspect it may be in Section 8, but I don't know. No, it's not.
Thank you. I'm Harriet Milkes from the Department of Law, and I'm happy to stand in as a lifeline. I just want to look at the last page. I believe it's also in the initiative. So I just was leafing through my materials here.
It's on page 7.
It's on page 7?
Section, yeah. Subsection B under section 10.
Is it page 7, line 12, by any chance?
Yes.
Yes, that's it. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Greenberg.
I think if the board's going to operate under the APA, it should not just be in a transitional section, but it's got to be put somewhere in the body of the bill in permanent law. Through the Chair, with Ms.
Through the Chair, Representative Greenberg, I think that's certainly a legitimate concern, and I don't at this point have any reason why that couldn't happen.
Madam
Chair?
I hear Cindy Franklin on the line.
Yes.
Madam Chair, this is Cindy Franklin with the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. Section 1738090A1 in the Voters Initiative provides that all of the regulations are subject to the requirements of the Administrative Procedure Act.
Thank you. That answers my question.
Ms. Milkes, you need to identify yourself for the record.
I'm sorry if I didn't. Madam Chair, my name is Harriet Milkes, and I'm with the Department of Law.
Thank you. Representative Millett.
Thank you, Ms. Milkes. Can we go back to what Mr. Schulte was talking about on page 4, line 15 and 16? Do you have any problem with changing control to regulate and taking out possession? Because I believe he's correct. We're not regulating possession.
Through the chair, Representative Millett, I would just offer the following comments. This language, including the word control, comes from Title IV, and to the extent the marijuana laws were intended to at least, the language, a lot of it comes from Title IV. That's where the word control comes from. Elsewhere in the initiative and in this bill, it's made clear that the Marijuana Control Board would regulate marijuana. That's clear. So the word control, again, comes from Title IV, and it's not particularly, it's not absolutely necessary that that word be control. As to possession, I can offer this observation, that there are certain circumstances where the possession of marijuana would be inconsistent with the marijuana laws as they're being drafted. Certainly some possession is protected under the Constitution and under case law, but
follow up.
Go ahead.
But the possession of marijuana wouldn't be something that you as a board would be concerned with. That would be under the Department of Law or Public Safety, same with possession of alcohol. You don't have enforcement if someone has alcohol. You don't ticket them for having possession of alcohol. You ticket them for not taxing it correctly or not having a license. So why would you regulate marijuana under a possession issue when that would be something for public safety to ticket or to regulate?
Well, through the chair, Representative Millett, I think that depends on the scope of the regulation that's anticipated for the Marijuana Control Board. If the Marijuana Control Board is anticipated to have enforcement powers, they would be able to, or they could be able to, conceivably regulate certain circumstances of possession. For example, where you have more than a certain number of plants in your possession, or you're possessing it in other circumstances, or you're possessing marijuana while you're transporting it from a manufacturer to a retail establishment, or from a cultivator to a producer, for example. There are circumstances, so there could be circumstances where the board would regulate that.
Go ahead.
So I guess that's why I have an issue, because you are not public safety, therefore you shouldn't be ticketing on possession issues. We come into again what the initiative sponsors were looking at as a control board. You were just to control the manufacture, the sale of marijuana, not the possession. Why wouldn't, if you had a problem with possession, why wouldn't you call someone that could actually enforce that, which would be public safety? I mean, are we giving you powers of enforcement here? So now you're going to be monitoring possession, so can you go into a storefront and say you're possessing too many plants? I mean, I guess, is that what you're looking for? So we'll have dual enforcement through public safety laws and through the alcohol control board or the marijuana control board.
I understand. Through the chair, Representative Millett, I'm looking at page 5, line 16. The paragraph titled Enforcement Powers. And this paragraph would give certain enforcement powers to the Marijuana Control Board. And that's something about which Cindy Franklin has testified extensively. And if she's still on the phone, perhaps you could direct those questions, further questions to her.
Cynthia, are you on the line?
Madam. Yes. Madam Chair and Representative through the Chair, first of all, the language that's reflected there that you have directed Ms. Mokes to is a direct copy of the language that the Alcohol Beverage Control Board has regarding the control of alcohol. So that is something that we do with alcohol. We do control with the possession of alcohol. Because if you limit the board to controlling only those individuals who have licenses, then you have taken away the board's authority to shut down commercial enterprises that don't have licenses. And with regards to marijuana, I think it's important when we think about the term possession that we distinguish between personal possession, which is what is in 1738.020 and what the representative was referring to in terms of what the voters intended with regard to the sanctity of personal possession of marijuana and how many plants and how much marijuana that is. But what we're talking about here is a commercial context where someone has opened a commercial marijuana enterprise without following the rules, without getting a license. And we already have three examples of those types of facilities in the state. And we already have the situation where without enforcement authority, this board is unable to act on something that we're clearly expected to act on. So when a business advertises that it's delivering marijuana, our board is the one that gets the calls. We've already gotten the calls, you know, to shut that place down because the individuals who are going to apply for licenses and who are going to follow the rules want to see everyone on a level playing field following the rules. And if someone jumps out there and says, well, I'm not going to wait for the rules, I'm just going to open my business, and, you know, I'll just wait for them to shut me down, well, the them that shuts them down is typically thought of to be the control board. And if you think about a warehouse full of marijuana that doesn't have a license to be a marijuana cultivation facility, the possession aspect of that marijuana is part of the control aspect. So I think it is very important in both alcohol and marijuana that the board have that enforcement authority. And when you talk about separate enforcement, it really doesn't work that way in real life. In real life, our board and our very small enforcement team, 5 officers statewide, proposed to be 8 officers statewide with the addition of this substance, works with local law enforcement both to just to make sure that everyone operating in a commercial context and making money off of this substance in a commercial way is being regulated, is subject to the rules, has got a license, has followed the rules. And if you say the board only has authority over those businesses that are licensed, then it completely does away with the ability of the board to shut down anyone who tries to get out there without a license. So it is confusing, I think, when you talk about possession, because we mostly think of personal possession. But what's being referred to there is an exact duplication of the type of control that the Alcohol and Beverage Control Board has over alcohol.
So, Ms. Franklin, wouldn't they be shut down when somebody calls the cops and the cops arrest everybody? Why would the alcohol marijuana control board be doing it? Why would the cops be doing it?
Depending on where in the state this establishment is and what their priority is, it's been a very frustrating situation because the cops then have some confusion about what they are and aren't allowed to do. And, you know, the board and the board's enforcement officers, which are supposedly the de facto experts on what is and isn't allowed, whether it be around alcohol or marijuana, we find ourselves saying to the troopers or the local law enforcement, oh, yes, you know, you need to shut those people down, but we don't have the ability to do it ourselves. And so it depends on that law enforcement agency's priorities. Many times their priorities are the shootings, the stabbings, the rapes, the murders. And so if this place that, you know, illegally dealing in alcohol or marijuana doesn't rise high enough priority list, we might not get the kind of action that we need in the time frame that we need on an establishment like that. And we've already experienced that with these 3 commercial marijuana enterprises that we're aware of in the state that have gotten out ahead of the rules and said, we're just gonna get what we can now and get out ahead of the rules and not wait for the rules and open our places now. And we've had a very mixed bag in terms of what other law enforcement have been able to do in shutting those places down.
Thank you. Representative Miller.
I guess we call that the Charlotte Clause. I have 2 questions. So absent of a decriminalization piece of legislation, let's say that we somehow in the next 13 days don't get a piece of legislation that decriminalizes marijuana, how do you regulate from a board if we don't have possession limits and plant limits and you know, anything set in stone in a piece of legislation, how does the board go forward until we get to a point next session where we have a decriminalization bill?
Representative Millett, through the chair, because there wouldn't be a marijuana control board and it would default to the alcohol control board, we would use the rules that already exist in Title IV for the alcohol control board in terms of their enforcement authorities and powers. 1738 does provide us some guidance on what is a personal grow versus a commercial grow. We have on our website and have to date in determining, you know, what the lines are, where that personal grow stops and where it turns into a commercial grow, for instance. We have been using current case law to interpret that. So the law that the courts have generated around what constitutes possession, joint possession, and constructive possession. So you see opinion on the website that if you read that strictly with all of the case law, that you know that would really be limited to 6 plants per household. We would like to see the legislature act, obviously, which is why we've invested so much time in all of these bills. But if none of the bills come through, then we will take the framework of the initiative and move forward as best we can until the legislature gets back together next year.
Thank you. Representative Millett and then Representative Foster.
So my final question is, so your ability to shut down a illegal manufacturing or storefront, so I know this is going to sound crazy, but can you arrest people as an alcohol board?
Representative Millett, through the chair, we have police officers. They hold special commissions from the Commissioner of Public Safety. They are law enforcement officers. They do have the ability to make arrests. Their enforcement authority is limited in Title IV by 406.110, which limits them to enforcing the rules around alcohol, also prostitution and gambling as they relate to alcohol. And there is a section in there for other criminally punishable provisions. We believe that if no legislation was forthcoming, we would be working with the Department of Public Safety and working on those commissions and making sure that to the extent legally possible, we have the authority to regulate this substance the way that the voters intended for us to do as set forth in 1738.
Thank you.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 2, lines 30 and 31, says, and this is for the department, the rural member of the board shall reside or have resided in a rural area for not fewer than 180 days within the 5 years preceding appointment. The way I read that looks to me like you could have spent 6 months in the prior 5 years and not 6 months in each of the prior 5 years. Am I reading that correctly?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, yes, I believe that's a correct reading. It would be 6 months within the total period of 5 years preceding appointment.
Okay. So that's an area of concern for me. And then I also have a question on page 3, lines 21 and 22, rural area means a community with a population of 6,000 or less. I just pulled this up, and Bethel, Alaska has, as of the last census, 6,080, and they're very much rural, so I think that's something we might want to bump up a little bit. So, thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else have any questions? Representative Klayman.
And I'm not sure who the best person is. We're looking back on page 4 on the whole use of the word the board, line 15, the board shall control the cultivation, manufacture, et cetera. I understand that control is what's in the ABC statute, but is there a problem if we switch that to regulate? Does that create some sort of a problem? I understand it may be different words, but sometimes the words in the other statute may not be perfect, and we could do better.
Through the chair, Representative Clayman, I'll give a first shot at answering that and then let Cindy Franklin add to it. The word control here certainly encompasses regulate, but if there are enforcement powers that are given to the board, that would be something beyond just regulate. That would be the ability to go in and say, we're shutting you down, we're taking your marijuana plants, or we're impounding them, or whatever the response is. So it's a control certainly is a broader range of responses than just regulate.
Thank you. Ms. Franklin, do you want to comment here also?
Madam Chair, the only comment I would add is that the voters voted that if they create a separate board, it is called the Marijuana Control Board. So I believe it's disingenuous to say that it didn't mean control.
Representative Grunberg.
And I'm not sure if this is for Ms. Milk or maybe somebody else, but it was discussed earlier, enforcement powers. Under section 1738.085 on page 5. Is there or does there need to be a provision that before the employees of the board exercise peace officers that they be trained and certified in some manner, so there's some training if they're going to be assuming these peace officer functions? And I'm just wondering, I assume there would be, they're not going to just employ somebody and send them out, there's going to be some training, and I'm wondering, does there has to be some authorization or requirement to do that? And maybe I should ask Ms. Franklin that.
I think that sounds like a good idea. Ms. Franklin?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, currently the requirement that those employees be peace officers is in their job description. So the way the minimum qualifications for those jobs are written is that those are police officers. And then they receive a commission from the Department of Public Safety. So I believe there are a couple of safeguards in place currently that protect against the idea of the department just hiring someone who does not have that experience or qualification and getting them into this enforcement position. They have to meet those minimum qualifications under the administration's requirements for getting the job, and then the Commissioner of Public Safety has the additional opportunity to review their qualifications. If the Commissioner of Public Safety declined to commission them, then that would be a problem for the department. We wouldn't be able to have that individual in that job. So we had a couple of safeguards built in there. We've historically employed these officers over the years under this same language in Title IV. We've never had an issue with individuals not being qualified for that commission.
My question to the chair, Ms. Franklin, was more of a technical one, whether we had to put something into a statute to say that. But it sounds like, at least for the alcoholic beverage control folks, that this language is sufficient through the chair. Am I right in that?
Representative Grunberg through the chair, correct.
Okay. One thing that seems to be kind of a recurring theme is that some of these terms and drafting which catch our eye, and I think these comments that have been coming around throughout this, we all see the same kinds of things. I think that maybe because the Title IV alcohol control statutes were written many years ago when the drafting style was somewhat different and maybe a little looser, and since we're kind of following them, I would suggest that I understand there's going to be a revision of those laws, that it may be at that time, as you update the phraseology, that you would do conforming amendments so that we're in line with them, but the language we use is the most modern language.
Thank you. Do we have any more questions for Ms. Franklin or Ms. Milkey?
Milks, thank you.
Milks, sorry. Well, it was my intention to get this bill out today, but following in there is no such thing as a simple bill, and there's no such thing as a bill that you want to get out today that ever gets out today. I think I am going to hold this over. I think we've heard about, a couple of amendments. Representative Foster might want to make one with respect to rural areas and definitions. Could the folks who have amendments that they would like to make, could they get them in by tomorrow so that we can, the next time we take up this bill? And
this is amendment for, as you're talking about.
Pardon me? We won't consider any more amendments today. And I'm going to hold this bill, and I'll try to take it up on Wednesday. It's the first bill on Wednesday. Representative Greenberg.
Madam Chair, there have been some technical things that the witnesses have mentioned, and didn't seem to be particularly controversial. And I'm wondering, is the staff going to come out with a CS incorporating some of those technical
things? Yeah, we actually may do that for some of those things.
That'll save me anyway.
All right. Representative Klayman.
I just note there was in page 3, in terms of some of the amendments we may want to look at as a committee, the immediate family member, spouse, child, or parent is a little bit narrower than what we're applying in this day and age for immediate family members.
Where is that?
It's in subsection G, H, subsection H, line number 2 on page 3.
And how would you like to see that?
Well, I haven't thought about the words. It's kind of more a conceptual idea, but we certainly are taking a broader view of family.
Why don't you work with my office on that, and maybe we'll come up with a CS dealing with some of these things.
That's fine.
All right. So we will go on. Thank you very much. Ms. Franklin, you'll hold on just in case we get to you for public testimony today on SB 30. Representative Greenberg?
Yeah. Just something. I'm looking at this here, on page 3, line 22, and I'm not familiar with that statute, but I do believe it was the subject of extensive debate on the House floor in about 1985. It talks about monuments and things, strange things here, that we might want to take a look at.
Then you can work with my office on that, Representative Greenberg. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so the next up is SB 30, and we have Amy Sossman and Jordan Schilling presenting the bill. But first we have a CS version Q before the committee. May have a motion to adopt version Q.
Madam Chair, SB 30, LS 0231Q is in Quebec. I move that from the working document.
Thank you. So we act, hearing no objection, we have version Q before the committee, and we also have the original, we also have SB 30. So please put yourselves on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Amy Saltzman, staff to Senator McGuire.
And for the record, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill.
You can proceed.
Thank you. Madam Chair, it's my understanding that you wanted to hear a little bit about the process as the bill moved, Senate Bill 30 moved through the Senate Judiciary Committee.
That is Representative Greenberg.
I apologize. I seem to have a version T.
Version T, Representative Greenberg, as I said at the beginning, that is the bill that passed the Senate, and it is basically the Senate Finance versions, Senate Finance Committee's version of the bill. We're having two things before us. We're having T, which came over from the Senate. We're also going to have the CS, a CS for T, which is basically the Senate Judiciary version, which we heard many moons ago. So that we can kind of compare the two and see which way we want to go.
Okay.
Which is kind of unique, but I hope it works.
Yes,
absolutely. Proceed.
Thank you. The Senate Judiciary Committee gave a great amount of consideration for the best approach to implement Ballot Measure 2. In an earlier draft of Senate Bill 30 version N, which there was a House companion, it offered a affirmative defense approach. The initiative sponsors and others expressed concerns about this approach because it was at odds with the intent of the ballot initiative, and they felt as though by creating a defense to a legal sanction, the onus and the expense of avoiding punishment or prosecution would fall to the person that was participating in a lawful marijuana activity. So the Senate Judiciary Committee found these concerns to be very persuasive and redrafted the bill to assure that the activities addressed in the ballot measure would be affirmatively legal. And by doing so, they removed them from the controlled substances. It was the only other option that we were presented with at the time. Legal gave us this approach, and then further down the road they kind of came up with another approach, which we saw in Senate Finance. So that is why we went with the process that we did. Most of the bill, you can see it's 160 sections, but the substantive sections where we actually have the crimes created and the implementation of the ballot measure are in sections 44 through 51, and so that's where the actual meat of the bill is. We have several different crimes that we created and that were really followed through in the Senate Finance Committee. That was a lot of our work was followed through there, and those crimes are kind of mirrored with what the intent was of the Judiciary Committee to some degree. And we can kind of go through those if you'd like. I know that Jordan can speak to those sections that actually made it to version T. I can speak to some of the differences between those sections, but those are really where the heart of the crimes and the mixed statutes are really in the two different versions, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And Madam Chair, I could tell you briefly kind of the different approach that the finance version takes. So when it left Senate Judiciary, there was an attempt to simplify the bill. One of the ways that you can do that is by adding it back into the controlled substance schedules. The Finance Committee did that, and you know, when that approach was attempted in Senate Judiciary, we used an affirmative defense, which met some pretty vocal opposition. So our solution to that in Senate Finance, something that Legislative Legal Services told us we could do, is rather than rely on an affirmative defense or a defense, you can put it back in the controlled substance schedule and use a non-applicability provision to simply say that the conduct that's allowed for under the voter initiative something you can do. Anything outside of that, regular laws apply, but we apply the non-applicability provision to all of the conduct that the initiative allows for. And so that's probably the big difference. A couple other things that happened in Senate Finance, some local option provisions were put in. Essentially, opting out by default established villages in the unorganized borough and giving them the possibility of opting in. Changes were made to the open container law.
Representative, Mr. Schumann, guess I've elevated you for some time in the future. Or demoted you, one or the other. So, how would, under the current Senate bill, how would places in the unorganized borough which would now be able to have a marijuana shop. But if they weren't in an established village, they wouldn't be able to have anything, would they? Like along the road system.
Madam Chair, yes, the way I read that provision is that only those in an established village can opt in for the commercial side, and everything else in the unorganized borough is opted out with no provision to opt in. So yes, there would be some places in the unorganized borough that are on the road that would not have the possibility of having a marijuana establishment.
Thank you.
So those are the big changes, Madam Chair.
What about all that language about how terrible marijuana is? Did that come from public testimony, or where did that come from?
I think you're, Madam Chair, I think you're referring to the purpose and findings sections, Section 1 and Section 2.
Yes.
I'll be honest, I'm not sure where that language originated from. That amendment came from Senator Hoffman's office. I can get that info and get it to the committee members.
Madam Chair, Doug Gardner is on the line, and he might be able to explain that a little bit further. It was added when the amendment from Hoffman was added to the bill.
And was that added on the floor or in Senate Finance?
Senate Finance.
Mr. Gardner, do you want to comment here?
Madam Chairman, Doug Gardner, Director of Legal Services. Excuse me, I was asked to attend to discuss the different approaches that the bills take. I'm not the drafter of the bill, so I can get the drafter online if you would like to ask specific questions, but that really wasn't my charge today, so let me know if you want me to get Hillary Martin to comment.
Well, actually, we were just wondering right now about the Section 2, the findings, where those had come from.
I can't answer that question. Perhaps Mr. Schilling or Ms. Saltzman can, but I can't answer that question.
They threw the lifeline to you. All right, thanks very much. Amy or Jordan, the big differences between the judiciary version and the bill that came over from the Senate as to the felony aspects of the bill. Am I correct? Do you want to go into those?
Yeah, Madam Chair, that's correct. I think and Amy can correct me if I'm wrong, the Senate Judiciary version did not have any felony conduct. I believe the highest penalty you could get for anything, any kind of conduct outside the initiative was a Class A misdemeanor that carries up to a year in jail and a $10,000 fine. In the work that the Finance Committee did, there were three felonies added to the bill. The first one being possessing 25 or more plants. The second one being possessing a pound or more of marijuana. And the third one being furnishing marijuana to a minor twice in 5 years. And that is the felony that is congruent with the way we treat alcohol. If you furnish alcohol to a minor twice in 5 years, that's felony conduct. The only other felony conduct in Title IV is stuff relating to delivering alcohol in a dry village.
Thank you. So are there any other differences that you folks want to point out between the judiciary and the final bill?
Madam Chair, there were some differences in the Class A misdemeanors and the Class B misdemeanors and then what were considered violations. There were additions made to the amount of possession. The Senate Finance added that if you had 3 but less than 16 ounces of marijuana outside the home or 12 to 24 plants, that would be a Class A misdemeanor. And those were changed from the Senate Judiciary version. And then in the same note, our Class B misdemeanor, having 2 but less than 3 ounces of marijuana outside your home or possessing 7 to 11 marijuana plants would be misconduct and a Class B misdemeanor.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going back to the question of the unorganized boroughs,
So my understanding is in the finance version, a community such as Tok, for example, Tok is not a city. What they do have there is it's called the Umbrella Corp for Tok. And so in that situation, it's not a village, so they can't opt in. And they're in an unorganized borough, so there's no provision, nothing that deals with them being able to, I guess, sell marijuana there, correct? And then there'll be a follow-up.
Representative Foster, through the chair, yes, if they are not a municipality, if they are in the unorganized borough, and they are not an established village, then correct. The way I read the amendment is they wouldn't have any recourse to opt in.
Follow-up?
Go ahead.
So in the judiciary version, is there a provision for communities such as Tok?
Representative Foster, through the chair, the judiciary version had the traditional local option law that you see for alcohol. It pretty much mirrors it. So they would, by default, because the voters approved the initiative, they'd be able to do the conduct under there. They would have to actively opt out.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mellett.
So I just have a question. So we passed the bill on the floor the other day that Kathy Tilton had. Does that cover these things that are already covered in this, or are we still dealing with the opt-in, the opt-out, the unorganized, the dry, damp, wet? Are we still dealing with that in this bill? Because my understanding was is that we cleaned up all that language and sent a bill over to the Senate that had all of that included in the piece of legislation.
You're actually right. It's kind of hard to determine with 14 days what bill is going to make it, what bill is not going to make it. So we're all just considering this stuff right now.
Representative Miller, through the chair, if I may, Madam Chair, I'm not an expert on HB 75, but it's my understanding that the way they crafted the local option provisions mirrors what Senate Bill 30's Senate Judiciary version had.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, are we going to rehash that bill one more time in this bill? Or are we just going to focus on the decriminalization?
It would be my intent to basically focus on the decriminalization. That would be what I would like to see.
I would vote for that option too, Madam Chair.
Me too.
Well, why don't we just vote now and we can...
I'm tired of dope. Let's just say that.
You joined the wrong committee, Representative.
Apparently.
Is it appropriate to get a sense of the committee about how we want to approach SB 30 or whatever?
That's exactly why.
Without actually voting on amendments.
The idea is to try to determine, to get a sense of the committee as to whether we wish to go the route of Senate Judiciary, which we discussed at length in this committee, or go the route of Senate Finance, or go some third route or fourth route,
Madam
for that
Chair.
Matter. Representative Mellett.
I would like to fix the Senate's mess. I have to get those digs in because they get in my mouth all the time.
Representative Greenberg.
It would help me if we could get a side-by-side so we could see as we go through it what we like. And some we may take one, some we may take another, some we may meld. But if we have the comparison, at least to some extent, we can see what the choices are.
I agree with you that the way they've gone is so far apart, however, that it's a totally different technique, philosophy, etc. So just going a side by side isn't going to exactly do it. Representative Klayman.
What I would suggest for purposes of how do we as a committee want to proceed is that I think there's been broad consensus on this committee, and I think to a large extent in the entire House, that while many may not have supported the initiative, now that it's passed, we want to do our best to be true to the voters, to the words of the initiative as enacted by the voters, and so we don't want to be going far afield from what the voters voted on. And I also think there's a lot to be gained from trying not to build too many wheels in one bill. and or reinvent too many rules. And so I would suggest, for purposes of kind of what which I see SB 30 as more to do with the criminal sanctions, that if we work on the basic understanding that SB or HB 75, which passed last week, that really deals with the local option issues, that we should focus our attention in terms of what comes down as a committee substitute that's much more focused on the criminal penalties and not much more, because then we have a fighting chance of having it fairly tight. I see Representative Keller shaking his head, so we have a discussion.
Okay. Well, that is what this committee is all about, discussion. Representative Keller.
Nothing specific. I just don't want to write off the work of the other body in their committee, simply saying they didn't consider it all. And I think we have an obligation to look at and make a rational decision with both in mind.
And that, Representative Keller, is why I had both versions brought in today, so that we could make a decision as a committee as to where we wanted to go. I tend to lean towards the Senate Judiciary version. But I didn't want to simply strip the bill and substitute the Senate Judiciary version without a discussion in this committee.
Madam Chair, I really appreciate that. And that is, I did not mean to imply anything other than that, other than the fact that there's no reason to make a decision. Sense of the committee, I don't think, without, look, we need another step here. We need to go and consider now.
If you look at the judiciary calendar's schedule, we have plenty of time that we are going to be spending on Senate Bill 30. I'm not going to try to pass something out today or even tomorrow on this bill.
It's dope every day, right?
It's dope every day. So, we have a few more minutes. We have a good many people who want to testify for public testimony. I'm going to open public testimony, but I'm not going to close public testimony. Representative Grunberg and then Representative...
No, we can take the testimony. I'm happy to wait.
No, I just wanted to ask something here. You folks, through the chair, have been with this from the get-go and worked a lot on the judiciary. And I suspect, maybe coming more from that point of view, I would like us, as we're doing this, since we're going to do what I think Representative Keller was talking about, have somebody come by from finance, too, so we know what their thinking was, and we get both sides of this.
Well, Mr. Schilling is staff to John Coghill, and is John on finance?
Madam Chair, no, he's not. Though I did help carry the bill through Senate Finance, so I'm happy to talk.
I think it's fine the way it.
I just want to be sure that we give both sides of the argument an opportunity.
Well, we have testimony. If somebody from finance would like to come over and give their version, that would be fine. I'm not going to exclude them. So I'd like to open up public testimony right now. And the first person that I'd like to call on, actually, because I've got a question for her, is Cynthia Franklin. Cynthia, are you on the line?
Madam Chair, yes.
And I know you have not signed up for public testimony, but I remember asking you in House Labor and Commerce, from the perspective of the regulator, which made more sense, the judiciary version where it was out of a controlled substance, or the finance version where it went back to a controlled substance. And I believe, if my memory is correct, I think that you told us that it probably made more sense from a regulatory perspective to leave it out of controlled substances. Is my memory correct, Ms. Franklin?
Madam Chair, yes. And I do want to say that I appreciate the work of the Senate Finance Committee, and I certainly join with other representatives who have expressed a tremendous amount of respect for their work. The preliminary considerations document that the Alcohol Beverage Control Board released at its February board meeting contained a section addressing this issue. And the board joined with me and the enforcement staff in recommending an approach that removes the substance from the Controlled Substances Act and creates the crimes around the substance in one place along with the regulations. That is the way that Title IV is modeled. So when you go and you look for the rules around alcohol, both commercial alcohol and non-commercial alcohol, what rules exist that substance in this state? Other than the crimes in the Vehicle Act in Title 28 around driving impaired, other than those crimes, you'll find all of the alcohol crimes in Title IV. So when you're talking about the carve-out approach that has crimes involving the substance in the Controlled Substances Act, the way that I like to explain it is that alcohol itself is not illegal, but there is a lot of conduct around alcohol that is illegal. So if you want to know what you can and you cannot do with alcohol, then you go to Title IV. What the voters said on November 4th is that they don't want marijuana to be illegal in Alaska, but they do want some conduct around marijuana to remain illegal. And that is reflected in 1738. We think from a regulatory standpoint, it would be much simpler to explain to everyone what the rules around marijuana are and what you can and cannot do with that dangerous substance in one place. And that is the reason why the board recommended that the substance be removed and that the crimes be created in one place to mirror the scheme that we have around alcohol. The last thing that I would say regarding that is that when we went to Colorado and spoke with regulators there about the carve-out system, which is what they have in Colorado, they feel that it substantially inhibits their ability to shut down that black market and prevent diversion, because the rules can be so confusing both for the public and law enforcement to understand. When you picture an officer on the side of the road staring at a pile, he is the one who has to decide whether that is illegal, controlled substance, Title 11 marijuana, or whether it is legal but regulated, Title 17 marijuana. And putting him in that position or her in that position on the side of the road, from the board's perspective, is an undesirable way of regulating the substance safely, with public safety in mind, and preventing the diversion and staying on the right side of the federal rules in the Cole memo.
Thank you. Do we have any questions here? Thank you. I really appreciate that. Next online, we have Belinda Phelps from Kenai.
Yes, Madam Leader, I'm here.
Yes, do you want to identify yourself for the record? Tell us with whom you're affiliated and proceed.
Certainly. My name is Belinda Phelps, and I'm a resident here locally on the Kenai Peninsula, and I am representing myself today. And I guess, you know, obviously that you guys have been doing a lot of work, and I really appreciate, I know there's a quite a daunting task ahead of us, or ahead of you. So but a few things that concern me with the current Finance Committee's SB 30 version, I guess to begin, I'll begin with the findings on page 1 of the bill, and I really see way too much propaganda from the 1960s and 1980s, and then I'm really urging that current information and medical research is involved, you know, here soon, so that, you know, a better indication of what's really happening can be seen. Another issue is the 16-ounce limit. Now, I know this has kind of gone back and forth through different committees, but, you know, according to Measure 2, it says everything produced from your six plants. So there should not be any limit within the home. I understand there should be one outside of the home for safety precautions and whatnot, but if you truly want to follow Measure 2, there cannot be any kind of limits within the home. we do have a right to keep whatever it plans to do. Another very concerning issue is, you know, cannabis should not be a considered controlled substance. It needs to be removed as a Schedule 6A and stay off of that list. I did a little research, and under Schedule 6, that means that there is no currently accepted medical use in the United States for this substance. By definition, marijuana does not belong on this list, and I would be more than happy to send you as much documentation to that effect as you need. In fact, U.S. Patent Number 663-0507, entitled Cannabinoids as Antioxidants and Neuroprotectants, is assigned to the United States of America as represented by the Department of Health and Human Services. So clearly, there is indeed an accepted medical use for cannabis, and it just does not go on Schedule 6A. This is in direct conflict with the current form of SB 30 that does place cannabis in the Schedule 6 category.
Ms. Phelps, can I ask you a question here? I mean, I understand what Ms. Franklin was saying, that it might make it better for the regulators to figure out and to control and regulate if both liquor and marijuana are not in the controlled substances, but both are treated the same. From the point of view of a regular person who's either smoking it or eating it or whatever with it, what difference does it make, as long as you're not arrested, whether it's, you know, considered a controlled substance or not?
Well, personally for me, what's bothering me about it is it's there for no reason. You know, there's not a good reason for it to be there. The definition, by definition, it does not belong there. There are many accepted medical uses for it in the United States. I know, you know, it's not too hard to find these things. So I think on a personal level, it doesn't belong there in the first place, but even if we go even further, in my opinion, you know, it's more of a larger animal at hand here, you know, even federally, which we don't want to get into that right now. That would be a whole other conversation. So I suppose it wouldn't make a difference, although to me it does, because it doesn't belong there to begin with. But, you know, why is it there? You know, I don't understand why it is there. If there's factual evidence that it should not be there. So if I were able to continue, I was going to discuss a little bit on concentrates. And that those are
part of... You've got about two minutes, Ms. Phelps.
Is that what I have left?
Yes.
Okay. All right, I only got one more paragraph. Concentrates are a product of cannabis, and it clearly states in Measure 2 that marijuana and marijuana products would become legal. And we truly hope that insulting the voters and claiming we did not understand what we voted for is not repeated. Voters did know what we voted for, and I know several petitions were signed and sent to the Senate supporting this. Concentrates are commonly used, and even more so for medical purposes, as the non-psychoactive compound cannabidiol is the main cannabinoid used and needs to be concentrated to gain enough strength to benefit patients suffering from cancer, Parkinson's disease, fibromyalgia, and epilepsy, among others. Our God-given right to survival should not be diminished by the United States government or the state of Alaska, in my opinion. And these things are very important to me, and if CBDs, which is cannabidiol, these don't have any psychoactive properties, and these commonly are used in a concentrated form. Otherwise, you don't get enough health benefit to do anything for your cancer or your fibromyalgia. So, a little bit more research there would kind of show you what I'm just talking about here and maybe give you a little bit more guidance. And I think I've cut you guys out early. I don't have my 2 minutes full, so that's all I have to say.
All right, thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Phelps? All right, the next person is Jason Howard from Soldotna. Jason, you want to identify yourself for the record, tell us with whom you're affiliated, and then proceed.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Jason Howard, and I'm representing myself. I just had a few suggestions with the wording on page 2, line 24 through 25, and it states that several hundred adults and children are admitted into treatment each year in Alaska for marijuana abuse, with nearly 46% being children under 20 years of age. And I did some research on this. And first of all, I think this is misleading because it may be taken out of context when you have a situation where a child has a choice to go to juvenile detention or to go to rehab for marijuana. And the same thing applies for adults as well. And I think that putting it into context is important for some of these statements that are being addressed here. And I also emailed some researchers that do research in suicide and other problems that children have, and it said studies have shown that endogenous opioid deficiency has led to self-harm, but they also, the researchers said that they haven't ever looked into, the body makes cannabinoids, and they haven't ever looked into a deficiency in cannabinoids in children. And I spoke with a therapist on the Kenai Peninsula, and he said that almost half of the children that he sees have a problem with self-harm. Okay, well, when you cut yourself, your body heals with cannabinoids. Okay, so I'm kind of confused as to why they're not looking at some of these things. And also on line 26 through 28, they sourced the DSM, which is the Diagnostic Statistics Manual for Mental Disorders. And this shouldn't be used as a guideline because this was written off of work groups and task forces, and it's a guide for insurance companies. It's not based off any scientific data. And you can even read that in the DSM yourself. It says that it is based off of work groups and task force, not scientific data. So I don't think that highlighting that in your bill is a very reliable source. Also on page 3, line 6, this statement about not having the research for marijuana and alcohol and other drugs are not fully understood. I would again say that that's not true because there's plenty of research on how marijuana and cannabinoids affect the brain and the reward system, and I can email that if anyone would like a copy. Also, on that same part, on section 7, it says marijuana consists of 100 different chemicals that can affect almost every organ system in the body. This again is misleading because our body has a lipid signaling system the signaling system in our body is done by cannabinoids. Okay? So it does regulate everything in our body, but based on this statement, it's implying that it's a negative effect. And so I hope that that may be corrected. And it also says that bacteria and fungi are dangerous to humans, and I think this is something that having it controlled and regulated, that would be addressed by having it controlled. Also on line 15, it says about 40% of adults are arrested with marijuana in their system, or who commit a violent offense have marijuana.
Jason, you're going to have to start wrapping up. You've got about 1 minute left.
Okay, I'll wrap up. I'm almost done, ma'am.
Thank you.
It says 40% of adults arrested in the state who commit violent offenses have marijuana in their system. Again, this is misleading because most of the tests that are out today, they don't test for active THC metabolites. They test for metabolites that are inactive. So, for example, you could smoke one day and be tested 30 days from now and still have those metabolites in your system. So again, this statement seems to be misleading to me. And lastly, my last problem with the wording is the 6 plant limit. It says that we are allowed only to grow 6 plants in our house. Well, I'm a medical marijuana user, and I'm a disabled veteran. I was blown up by 2 IEDs, and I was on large amounts of opioids, lorazepam, all the heavy narcotics for anxiety, sleep, very bad migraines, and all of those things were eliminated by cannabinoids. by limiting people who have a need for the medical aspect of cannabis, I think that's not very good for those people who really need it and need large amounts. Okay, so six plants is not gonna cut it for someone like myself who has all those problems. And that is the end of my testimony.
Thank you. Any questions? All right, thank you very much, Jason. Next person on the line is, I don't want to mispronounce your name again, is Rasham Young? Am I done it correctly this time?
Yes, Madam Chairman. It rhymes with Michelle, basically.
Thank you.
Rochelle.
Do you want to identify yourself for the record, tell us whom you're representing, and then proceed?
Yes, Madam Chairman. This is Rochelle Young with the Marijuana Policy Project. We did submit our comments in writing to the committee, so I hope you have a copy of those. And for the sake of time, I will just go over briefly our major concerns. And as you know, we were quite supportive of the Senate Judiciary versions of the bill, but we are also supportive of this version of SB 30, given our amendments or our suggestions are addressed. First and foremost, we believe that the entirety of Section 1 and 2 of this draft of the bill should be completely deleted. So the first Section 1 concerns the opting out of the unorganized boroughs, and as this committee has deemed in its wisdom, we also believe that the unorganized boroughs should not be opted out. Instead, established villages within the borough should have the option to opt themselves out, but we don't think that large swaths of the unorganized borough should be left without an option of whether or not to have marijuana establishments. And then secondly, Section 2, we believe should be stricken for its irrelevant and unscientific findings. As you yourself have noted, Madam, or implied, Madam Chairman, it doesn't seem like these findings came up during any of the hearings, and it's curious that such obviously biased language should make it into statute. So as far as specific concerns, and I'm going now into the details of the bills, but let me know if you do have a copy of that memo with you and you'd prefer for us to just do a broader overview. But I'm looking now at page 11.
I think we all have a copy of that memo, and I think that basically doing a broader overview, because we're going to have to wrap up here in a few minutes. We have other committee meetings.
Understood. Okay, so as far as a broader memo, broader overview, we also would recommend that SB 30 not ban delivery, as that would most likely affect medical patients who often have mobility issues, and in some cases are homebound, and this would help them access their medicine better. I would suggest reviewing the proposed fines or penalties for some of the crimes, as they may not meet up with the standards set by Measure 2. And also, in particular, point number 2 in our memo, we are very concerned that perhaps a drafting error has made it illegal for adults to display, use, or possess under an ounce of marijuana, which is obviously contrary to the fundamental purpose of Measure 2. And then otherwise, I'd be happy. Oh, and also we suggest amending the definition of marijuana, open marijuana container, so that it is reflective of the Senate Judiciary's definition, which we believe to be a better fit for the purpose of that provision.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Ms. Young? All right. Thank you, Ms. Young. We are going to be continuing public testimony. We're going to be continuing talking about this bill. It is 3 o'clock now, and so we are adjourned for the day.